welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my wife and co-host, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Eli and Hale, both trans men who met on the farm. Hello, you two.
Hi, Eli.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Yes, you're welcome.
Hale, hi. I met Eli at a wedding some months ago, and we got to talking. And you know how that is for me. I get to talking to people, and I'm always trying to recruit somebody from my play. You remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
And so we got to talking, and Eli shared that he would be going through transitioning, right?
Right, yeah. There was a part that you said I looked like the person you had in mind, and I said, well, I'm actually going to be changing fairly soon. I'm gonna hopefully going to start taking hormones, and so I was... It's interesting to hear about, but
yeah,
work out.
And so we stayed connected, and I said I would love for you to come and be on the radio show. And you say you had a partner and friend, Hale, who maybe the both of you. And so, look, you're here. Yay!
So, just to introduce Eli just a little bit to the listeners, Eli is a 27-year-old trans man, 6 months into his medical transition. He's from Marin County and moved to Sonoma County from Washington, D.C. about a year ago. After spending several years living and studying in the Middle East and 2 years working at the State Department in Washington, D.C., he is currently working part-time as a farmer and part-time with Sonoma County Regional Parks, exploring what he would like to do in the long term.
And Hale is a 30-year-old trans man who is 5 years into his transition. He is from Fresno, and we know that's California, but has lived in Sonoma County for 5 years. Hale has been a small-scale organic farmer for 9 years and is currently working on his master's degree in counseling. Yay for counselors. He hopes to work with transgender adults and youth in his, future practice?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Cool.
We have a lot to talk about since Diana is a therapist as well.
Yes.
So, cool. So we're going to learn more about Eli and Hale. But first, as always, here's news and events with Outbeat member Greg Muralia.
This is Greg Muralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of September 1st, 2019. In the state of Texas, indecent exposure has been a crime in person, but so far not online. That is until today, when a bill that Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed in May went into effect. The governor said many people, especially women, get unwanted sexually explicit pictures either by text or social media, and it's disgusting. Disgust seems to be what fueled the governor to sign House Bill 2789 that makes the electronic transmission of sexually explicit material a Class C misdemeanor with a maximum fine of $500 when the recipient hasn't provided consent. And here in the Bay Area last week, the San Jose Police Department, the 10th largest department in the nation, became the first big city department to raise the rainbow flag at their police department at the beginning of the San Jose Pride celebration. LGBT liaison officer James Gonzalez explains why now.
The chief commented that raising the flag over the police department was long overdue. There are other significances that this is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. It is Pride Week in San Jose. And but the motivation was this isn't something that police departments are doing. He feels that particularly for the support it shows for the rank and file officers who are part of the LGBT community, it was long overdue.
Chief Eddie Garcia took part in the ceremony at police headquarters by raising the flag himself. The community and rank and file appreciated the police department's commitment to the community.
The reaction from the community after raising the flag has really been overwhelming. People are overjoyed, became very emotional. All week at Pride, people keep coming up to us and saying how grateful they are. This sign of solidarity, particularly with the significance of Stonewall, The New York had made an official apology for that incident, and all of this really has been meaningful to the community, to the officers in particular. One of our officers spoke at the ceremony and just said what it meant to her that the department was making this sign of support of her, that she was loved and supported, and that everybody who came to work, hundreds of officers who would walk underneath that rainbow flag coming to work this weekend, was really impactful to her.
And for Officer Gonzalez, it was something personal.
To me, seeing that flag above the police department was hugely significant. I spent a lot of time, like so many people, closeted in law enforcement, not being truthful about who I was. It was a very painful time. And to see us come this far and to be celebrated was very impactful. Some retirees commented at the ceremony they never thought they would see this in their lifetime. So we're very proud this happened, and we hope other departments follow suit.
The Santa Rosa Police Department also flew a rainbow flag this last June at the beginning of the Sonoma County Pride celebration. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
I'd like to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And in studio, we have Eli and Hale, both trans men and friends. In fact, they worked together, met on the farm. And we're going to learn a little bit more about them right now.
Exactly. So, Hale, why don't you start telling the audience, just so we're trying to get the audience to know you a little bit, know your voices. So tell us a little bit about where you live and, you know, a little bit that you want to add to the story.
Yeah, I live in Sebastopol now. I've lived there for the last 2 years and around that area, West County, Occidental. And I work in Healdsburg with Eli. We work on a very, very small farm. I mean, some might even call it a large garden, but,
well, how many?
Okay.
Acres
let's get technical here.
So it's probably about a quarter acre, but we do everything by hand. So there's really not many tractors. There's really no tractor work involved, maybe once a year just to come and turn over the soil. But other than that, it's all handwork. So it's a lot with basically one full-time and one part-time person. So, but it's great because it's all just so hands-on that, you know, it's like kind of how they used to do it in a way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You kind of said, I didn't grow up here, but I've lived in Sonoma County for 5 years. I love it here. It's so awesome. And the farming is great. There's so many awesome local farmers, so many people doing sustainable organic stuff. And also I'm going back to school, like you said, to become a counselor, therapist. And I think pretty much when I started transitioning about 5 years ago is when I kind of, you know, I really realized like, It wasn't just physical for me. You know, at first you're kind of focused on the physical changes because, you know, that's the thing that kind of tips you off of like something doesn't feel right, you know. Mm. But, you know, this huge like emotional shift happened for me where, you know, I realized that I like tapped into a much more like emotional part of myself and really did a lot of just transformation inside, I think. And about that time, I think, you know, since in those past 5 years, really, I think, you know, life has kind of just guided me in that direction of therapy. I've mentored a few people. Just meeting Eli has been really, really interesting, like which we'll get into and stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that at some point I was like, all right, I got to do this because I think everything's telling me to do this. So that's kind of the path I'm on now. I'm still farming, but I'm kind of moving in that direction. I'm in my second year of grad school. So
where do you go to school?
University of San Francisco. Yeah, they have a campus here in Santa Rosa. We work out of the actual the JC. So, yeah, it's been great. I love it so far. It's a good time in my life. A lot of change and a lot of good things happening. So,
wonderful. Yeah. Good. Great. Yeah. Okay, Eli, share a little bit more about you.
Yeah, you gave a pretty good summary, but I grew up in Novato and then kind of lived all over the place after high school. Like you said, in and out of the Middle East for a couple years, studying Arabic on different scholarships, and then in Washington, D.C. for 2 years, repaying one of the scholarships by working for the federal government, and hated working in an office and and just in a huge bureaucracy, and decided I wanted to try something, a totally new type of work, be outdoors all the time, be moving around, and so thought I'd move back to the West Coast and see if I want to learn to farm and perhaps do that as a career. Also trying out working for parks, and kind of thought I'd just take a year or two to try different things and decide what sort of goal I want to have for my career. But then ended up meeting Hale, who came out to me and changed my life in another way and sort of set me off a different journey. And I haven't actually thought about my career all that much in the past year because it, like I said, yeah, set me off on something else. And it's been a whole long process that I guess we'll talk about of realizing that I'm trans and slowly coming out to people, transitioning, and yeah.
I really have to go back and ask you about your Arabic. I mean, what would make you take Arabic in school? I'm just curious, you know, and I think maybe the listeners might be curious.
For sure, yeah. So I grew up in Nevada and had never really been out of the country, hadn't traveled much, and was just desperate to see the world and learn languages. And so I was just in high school Googling different scholarships to travel abroad, and came across one from the State Department for high school students to study critical languages, ones that aren't commonly taught in U.S., especially public schools. So I chose Arabic almost kind of randomly. You could choose from a list of seven, including Mandarin, Korean, Russian, all these different critical languages that the government wants people to learn. And so I chose Arabic, and then they ended up sending me to Egypt for 6 weeks before I started college, and I just loved it. I lived with the host family, loved the people and the culture and the language especially. Mm. So I kept studying it in college and ended up getting another scholarship to go back to Egypt for a year during college, and then a postgraduate fellowship to Jordan after that. And it was just kind of one thing led to another. Mm. I never had a set plan of what I would do with it, but knew that I enjoyed it and just kind of kept going. And then realized that I didn't necessarily want to work for the military or intelligence agencies and the things that it kind of had equipped me to do. So I had to repay the scholarship by working for the State Department, which was an interesting experience. I learned a lot, but ultimately decided it was not for me, and I'm now sort of reinventing myself.
So this might sound like a naive question, but are you bilingual in Arabic then? I mean, you can hold a conversation and write and read and all that?
Yes. And so Arabic is kind of an interesting language. If you don't know much about it, it's they call it diaglossic. So there are many different dialects and varieties for each country, and then even for different parts of each country. So there's modern standard Arabic that they commonly teach in the U.S. and universities, but it's no one's native language. It's the language of the media, of the Quran, their religion, and literature. And so that's kind of a unifying factor that people learn in school. But no one speaks it natively, so each country has a very different native dialect. So I'm pretty fluent in modern standard Egyptian dialect and Jordanian dialect, so three varieties of Arabic. But if I went to, say, Morocco, I would understand very little. To Saudi Arabia, if they were speaking in really only their local dialect, I'd understand very little. Mm. So it depends on where you go, but yeah, fluent in a couple varieties.
I'm trying to get my mind around what you're saying, and you talked about the media, and it's like there is a way of English in this country that is, you know, on television, but if we were to go down to, let's say, where Louisiana, where they speak what, like Cajun and French Creole or something, and mm-hmm. I mean, I've met some of Diana's relatives from there, and they have a very strong accent. I can't understand much, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking that's probably the same thing, where each area has their own accents and dialects and things, but they're speaking the same language, at least here in America, but you wouldn't know it sometimes.
Yeah, with Arabic, it's definitely more than accent. It's, in some cases, totally different grammar structures and different vocabularies. Each, depending on how far you go between countries, they can. Some are more similar. The Levantine countries like Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria are much more similar to each other than they are to Egyptian or Moroccan. But, it's kind of a range. Mm-hmm.
But okay. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that, because I'm just curious, and I know you probably know the whole story.
He teaches me some Arabic sometimes on the farm.
Oh, really?
Like different plant names and stuff, yeah. Oh. My memory is terrible, but I try.
So let's start a little bit with your relationship and how you met. I think that would be a good lead-in to you both talking to each about your transition. So
perfect, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
When I started at the farm, we had just a much, much, if you can imagine, smaller garden. And then I expanded it to this quarter acre field that we have available to us. And it was too much for me as one person, so I was looking for an assistant, and Eli applied, and I saw his resume was like State Department, like all, you know, all these things, and I was like, wow, this person overqualified, but in a way had no farming experience. So I was like, clearly this person's intelligent, you know, and looking to get into farming, so it was like the perfect, like we're also around the same age, so it was like kind of perfect to have, I thought this person would be a good fit for me. So we did a Skype interview and hired him, and then that's how we started working together. And yeah, and so then it was about a month into me, us working together. And I casually one day, I think I just was like, oh, just so you know, I'm sure you know this already, but I'm trans, as if, you know, he would know that. I pass, you know, pretty easily. And, you know, but, and you were like, and then I was kind of like, just kept talking about, you know, whatever. I'm very chatty. So I was like, anyway, blah, blah, blah. And I think you were just like, wow, like what, wait, what? And like I had long hair at the time, or like longer, much longer hair, and I think you were just like, wait, is he transitioning into a woman or a man? Like, because it's like I didn't explain anything, I just kind of dropped this bomb on you sort of. And
is that something that you do normally?
I do. Oh, that, yeah. Is how I do it, yes.
Okay.
And so I think that kind of started you just like, you were like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, I mean you can speak, but like everything you felt, you were like, this is possible kind of thing. So
yeah, for me it was definitely a feeling I'd had from my earliest memories. I had desperately wanted to be a boy and felt like one, but I grew up in a somewhat conservative family, and so we never really talked about it, and at that time especially there weren't as many examples in the media, and especially not of trans men. So I'd never really, it seems silly, but I'd never put two and two together that what I felt was what transgender meant. And so when Hale came out to me, I just kind of, everything kind of stopped. Like he said, he kind of kept on talking and talking and talking. And the world just kind of stopped for me. And I thought, wait a second. And I sort of thought about it for the first time. Like, this person was born in a female body, and now he looks and sounds and everything the way that he does. And I just like kind of blew my mind. And so I don't think I said anything else that day, but slowly over the next weeks, I was sort of, you know, saying like, can I ask you about this? And like, how did you know? And all sorts of questions. And of course went home and Googled it, and realizing that just all the sort of experiences that people usually, who are trans, usually experience, it just matched up exactly with my own experience, almost like a checklist of things that I'd always felt growing up. And it just all kind of clicked into place. Everything, looking back through that lens, my life just made so much more sense, all the different memories. So then eventually I don't think I ever officially came out to Hale. It was just more of I think he just kind of realized it through the questions I was asking and my saying, so if I've always felt this way too, what does that mean? Because I felt very embarrassed to say right away, oh, me too, I'm that too, because clearly I didn't know anything about it. But it was just sort of a slow process. You asked me what pronouns you wanted me to use for you, or that I wanted you to use for me. I said, do you want me to use he, him pronouns or they, them? And I thought, well, I don't really feel like they, them, and he, him. I mean, it doesn't make sense yet because no one else knows about this and you'd have to be switching back and forth. So you know, she hers fine for now, and just kind of paused and thought about it and said, but I mean, if you wanted to call me, I wouldn't be offended or anything. And then from that time on, you just did, and you're pretty good about switching back, you know, when other people are around, because I wasn't out to anyone else yet. And slowly it was just kind of a process of taking little steps, changing my name, cutting my hair, slowly coming out to very close people to me, starting with my brothers and then a couple of close friends and then eventually parents and eventually starting hormones. But yeah, it was all started by meeting Hale.
It was a long process for you though. You definitely like took your time. I mean, and this is funny because like it's funny that we came to work together, first of all, because what are the chances of two trans men, you know, like hired, you know, out of all these people hired you and, you know, this happens. But also are just personality wise, we're like incredibly opposite. Like we've actually taken the Myers-Briggs test and it were like the opposite letters. Like it's really funny. Yeah. And you're very like, very analytical. You like plan things. I'm like spontaneous. I kind of just make decisions. Like I'm going to go back to school. Like, you know, it's like, I know in my gut that this is the right thing. And you're kind of like, I like evidence. Like I need to like, you know, and so
way
I think
overthink things before making any decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I was kind of like, oh yeah. And you were very much like, okay, you were processing it for a while, and I think, you know, trying to figure out, is this something I want to do? Do I want to go on hormones? Do I, you know, you knew that top surgery for you was going to be for sure, but like the hormone part, it's such a big change, and a lot of it is irreversible, and I think you were just, you had a lot of, you know, weighing sort of to do. Mm-hmm. So it was nice, you know, because we're out on this farm all day by ourselves, and here I am back to school to be a therapist. So it's like all these things like culminated in this, like, you know, we're supposed to like meet somehow because, you know, you're processing, I'm helping you process it. I've been through a lot of it, you know, and so we did a lot of that out there, and it's great because 8 hours a day just harvesting whatever, tomatoes. And
I call him my fairy trans god brother because he just magically appeared in my life at a moment when I needed him. And
I know, that's what I'm thinking.
And I can text him at any time of night asking him random things about, does testosterone do this to you or that to you, or how does, I don't know, what happens with this.
What
and
a blessing, yeah, though, to have Hale just be there at your service to educate and to learn from, right?
I think, and so many people, including myself, you kind of go through that process alone. Because when you come out, you've made the decision. That's it. You've come to that conclusion. You've got over sometimes some of the harder pieces of questioning and going back and forth. You know, and I think a lot of people. I use YouTube. I was YouTubing videos of other trans men. I was using the internet and. But, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, we got to, like, do it together. You know, any question you could ever ask me about, does testosterone make you do this, whatever, and, like, I'd be like, well, for me it was, or for me, you know. So it's kind of cool.
And it was so reassuring to have, a real life example in front of me all the time. And if I was having a really bad day or had maybe gone home to visit my parents and had a hard conversation or felt, you know, come back feeling very negative from it, to just see Hale the next day on the farm and either be able to laugh or cry or do whatever I needed to, like, start feeling better. And, yeah, it's been a very – and, like he said, he's – it's giving him good practice to become a therapist, I think. Giving him a run for his money, and luckily I think it's confirmed his desire instead of turned him away from it. But he's very good at asking the types of questions that I would never even think to ask myself or think about, and at not letting me get away from answering them if I don't want to answer them because they're hard questions and things like that. So it's worked out, I think.
Yeah.
How did you support Hale? How did you support Eli in going to talk to his parents
about? I mean you knew that at some point you were gonna have to, and it was definitely like a big worry just because of, you know, your parents, and they're, you know, pretty religious, and you were just knowing them, you were pretty sure they weren't gonna like disown you or anything like that, but you know, but you knew it'd be a really like hard conversation. So I feel like just asking you, like, what are you going to do if they say this? Or, like, how would you, you know, or they might do this. So what would that feel like? What would you, you know, just kind of almost like, I guess, kind of not purposely, but almost role playing in a way. And
yeah. And you shared your own coming out letter that you'd written to your parents, which is kind of a helpful template almost, or, you know, help me think through how to write my letter to people. And
I did encourage you to write a letter because I had written a letter, a pretty long letter to all my friends and family, emailed it, just because it's hard to say those things in person, as you know, we know it's hard to, you're so emotional and you've just come to this point where you are able to say it. And I think it's just to have your thoughts and you know, and if somebody, you know, they question you, it's like almost like, God, you kind of get so, for me, I'm emotional. So I get like kind of thrown off, and then I'm like, oh, I didn't say the thing I wanted to say. And now I'm just kind of in the defensive stance instead of coming with these facts and coming with this whole story. And I think writing a letter, you know, it helps you get that, like, okay, so it all started when I was, you know, and this has been something I've struggled with. And
you go way from the beginning.
I did.
How many pages was that?
It was about, I don't know. It was long. It was probably like a page and a half, 2 pages maybe.
Oh,
but
okay.
I just really wanted to like make the point that, you know, this is something that's, you know, it's been my whole life, and it isn't something I'm rashly making this decision about, and here's how it's affected me. And when people read a letter, they can't interrupt you. They can't fight back. They have to finish the letter. And I think that's super powerful. So that's why I encourage you to do it. And you did it. And
And people have told me it was very helpful, and so it's a good idea.
Yeah, I got a lot of good feedback on mine, and I've shared it with a lot of people even since, you know. And they're, you know, it's I think it's helpful.
So how long ago? Just go talk about it, Hale.
Yeah,
that journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long did you know? What was the workup to write the letter? I mean, when did you know that you were?
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I guess male. You know, going back, like I've always really, I always felt like that inside, and I think I had only male friends all through up until eighth grade, and I just thought, you know, I'm just one of the guys, you know. And then, you know, puberty hit, and I think for a lot of trans people, that's sort of the time where your body's like, nope, you're not this is what you are, and we'll let you know. And it's kind of like, it's hard. That was like a really hard period where, you know, you have to come to, I had to come to terms with, I guess I'm a woman and I guess this is going to be my life. I had all these things I told myself, like, and I'm attracted to women as well. So as in a woman's body, I knew I was attracted to women, but I also knew that like, I didn't feel like a woman. So it was a lot to kind of like, I don't know, it's a lot to like sift through, but I was like, well, I guess I'll just live a lie. Like, that's kind of like what I like thought. I had a religious upbringing as well as Eli. And so a lot of like, it wasn't an option. I didn't have any role models. There was no one in the media at that time to look to. I just kind of thought this is how it's going to be. And then grew up, went to college, graduated from college, and was in, that's when I moved to Napa. So I was in Napa at that time, and just started like looking. I'd heard of like trans people. I'd had a class in college where we had trans people come and speak, and, even that, I just was so in denial that didn't even like get through, you know. And then my cousin came out as trans. He's also a trans man. He's a couple years older than me. And even that, like, didn't even tip me off. I was still, it almost made me, like, I think, be like, yeah, that's not me, you know. My defensive system, like, I do a real good denial. Like, that's my superpower sometimes, I think.
Going into the right field.
Yeah.
Learn a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, but I think, you know, after a while, it just wears you down. It wore me down. Mm-hmm. I was in a place in my life where I was a lot alone a lot. My job was super stressful. And I think I would just go home every day and search the internet for trans men transition videos. Mm-hmm. And I think at about 6 months of that, and I was like, well, you know, why do you think you're looking at these, Hale? Like, you know, this is you. And I think that's when I started to like unravel it all and sort of like start my coming out process, and just told like my partner first, who was super supportive. Well, my ex-partner, but she was super supportive, and then super close friends that I knew kind of, I think, you know, just kind of dipped your toes, and I knew they would be supportive, and then told my brother, and then he was supportive, and then just kind of did the hard like family stuff, which it was.
So you were living, would you say, lesbians?
Yes, I was. Yeah, for like, you know, since I was 18 when I went away to college, I was a lesbian, but I never liked that word. It makes sense because that's not who I am. But, yeah, you know, I was like, this doesn't fit. It's weird. I was a female body dating women up until that time, and it worked for a while. I like my appearance got more and more masculine until I realized like it's not the clothes. It's like, the inside and the outside, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wow, powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And well, maybe we should take a music break and then come back, because I have a very interesting question that I'd like to pose to you both. Hale, you brought a song. Mm-hmm. Would you introduce it for
us? Yeah, the song is called Leavin' by a local band called West of Mall Bay.
And what's the song about? Why did you bring it tonight?
I brought it tonight because my partner is one of the lead singers and songwriters in the band, and their band is just starting up, and they're really trying to make a name. They just got all their music on Spotify recently, so they're just really trying to make a name for themselves, and I think the song is really catchy, and I like the song, so yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, here it is, Leavin' by West of Mall Bay.
Found a name. We lit a match and now the walls are up in flames. This heat feels good. Can we burn it all away? Gonna catch a plane early in the morning, and I can't believe this day. Arrived here without warning, and you told me I could stay, but I'm still leaving. Ooh, 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 ooh
You just joined us. This is Living Proof, and you were listening to Leavin by West of Malbay, and they are a local group. They perform at Hot Monk and
Twin Oaks
in Pengrove. So I want to check them out. I like their vibe a lot. So to be continued about West of Malbay. Wow, it's an interesting name, West of Malbay.
Yeah.
How did they come with that?
So Scott, one of the other lead singer, he has family in Ireland, I believe, and they're in, I think, Malbay. I could be getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh. And so they're kind of mixing the heritage of like the Irish, and then but they're west of Malbay, so a little
interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's very unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Good plug you put in for
us. Yeah.
Yeah, they owe me one.
Right before our music break, we were talking to Eli and Hale about letters written home and more of your more of your process.
There you go.
And so we want to continue that conversation. So, Diana, you were going to ask Eli some questions, I believe.
Yeah. We're just going to continue where Hale just shared about his journey, and we would like to know about your journey.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned at the beginning, it's something that I always felt from my very earliest memories, that I always just wanted to be a boy so bad. I had two brothers and no sisters and just felt like one of them, wanted to be one of them. My best friend was a boy and just kind of went through... I don't think I ever really told anyone that I was a boy or wanted to be a boy, but I just remember feeling it so intensely inside and being so confused because I felt like I wanted to tell someone, but at the same time knew it was something I shouldn't want. So just having very confused, mixed feelings kind of throughout childhood. And then, like Hale said, puberty was just terrible. And, you know, as I started developing breasts, trying to, you know, bind them kind of informally by, you know, wearing sports bras that were way too tight and just kind of wearing very baggy clothes. And then, you know, as I got older, just kind of realizing this isn't going away, I just kind of have to deal with it, and I guess it's just me, and so learn to live with it. But as soon as I met Hale, kind of realized, oh no, this, I can do something about this. And it felt like, I mean, after very long, many months of processing and thinking about it and agonizing, I did feel like the right thing to do.
How did you know it wasn't okay? Did you have images? Did people talk about it? Did the kids on the playground make fun of people or you? Or how did you come to that?
As a little kid, no, I hadn't really heard of, you know, kids weren't making fun of trans people. I just don't think we were talking about that at all. But it just, I guess I did, as a kid, I didn't really know it was an option to switch. And my parents are somewhat conservative Christian, and it just, you know, there's like God made men and women, and this is their role and that role. And it just kind of, so it was more implicit that I understood, you know, that I couldn't change or shouldn't want to change, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anything else about the journey? And so we want to know about the letter and how did that come about? And go ahead.
And then I realized too, you were asking about partners because Hale knew that, that he was attracted to women from an early age, which kind of went along with feeling like a man for some people. And for me, I actually am asexual, and I know that that's something that not a lot of people know about. And people can experience it very differently. But for me, it basically means that I've never really experienced sexual attraction or sex drive. And so that was something I realized in college after having a romantic relationship, that it was odd because I liked the person a lot and we got along great, but, you know, I really had no sexual attraction, and came across that term online, and it kind of explained a lot for me. It wasn't like realizing I was trans, because there was no real decision I had to make. There's no reason to come out, or, you know, no transition to do. I wasn't asking people to change pronouns or names. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, this makes sense. It explains a lot. But I sort of went on with my life, and it didn't really impact that much. And so some asexual people are also aromantic, which means that they also don't experience any romantic attraction and maybe don't want a partner or anything like that. But then some asexual people do experience romantic attraction. And so I fall into that category. I think I like the idea of having a life partner. But yes, I fall into this small category that's sometimes the A is included in the LGBTQIA, all those letters. But I think it's one that not a lot of people know about. It's not talked about very much. So it's always, I'd always try to raise awareness when I can a little bit. But there are people out there like that, just not very many of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like pressure sometimes when you're in your relationship? I don't know how that was. Was this other person asexual as well? Or
no, he was not. And it was before I realized that I was. So I was kind of, I was just confused. Like, why is he feeling this way and I don't feel this way? And so that was definitely confusing, and I felt pressure. And now that I realize that about myself, it just kind of is, I can be more open about it. But it's also, it's hard to find a partner who isn't really interested in sex or who's willing to compromise and that sort of thing. So again, I've sort of been on this whole trans journey recently, so I haven't been thinking about it all that much. But yeah, it'll be something to, you know, just another part of me to understand as mm-hmm. I go.
So I'm going to ask a little deeper question with the hormones that you're taking. Mm-hmm. Don't they supposed to heighten sexual drive? Mm-hmm. And no, I'm just bringing it up to discussion. So yeah, whatever you want to share about that, Eli.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or Hale.
Yeah. So it was interesting, because that was one of the things before, like Hale said, I took a really long time to do all my research and weigh different pros and cons of testosterone. And that was something mm-hmm. that people do talk about, that it increases your sex drive. And mm-hmm. and for me, it was kind of like, well, I've never had a sex drive. I don't really know what that's even like. So it's hard to imagine what does that mean to increase it. So I was kind of went into it with an open mind. And some people were saying for asexual people, because I you know, Googled asexual, trans men, testosterone, different things like that. And there definitely are forums out there, people saying that I never had a sex drive before and still have never felt one. Other people saying that they had a little one, and it just seemed like a whole mm. range of experiences. And so mm-hmm. it was interesting. After my very first shot, I definitely kind of felt something in the middle of that week, which is an odd sort of like kind of overwhelming feeling almost. But then it hasn't come back since then. So I don't know if it was just the very first sort of when I had like a spike of that hormone in my body that I felt that way. But I've been on it over 6 months now and has never really come back. Mm. So I don't know what that means. It might come back at some point, but until now it really hasn't been a part of it for mm-hmm. me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you for educating all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Hale?
Yeah, I think it's, I guess so. I mean, yeah, testosterone definitely changes your sex drive, that's for sure. It changes your sex drive, yeah. It increases your sex drive.
I mean, that's what I've heard, you know, so I just wanted to hear in this situation.
Yeah. And yeah, like you were asking me a lot about that when you mm-hmm. were considering going on testosterone, and my experience was that it very much increased your, like, it increased your sex drive, and it kind of like, it's different. It's very different. It was hard to imagine. I mean, I'd read about it and heard about it and that from people that had already mm-hmm. transitioned, but it definitely changed things. So, I mean, that was definitely something I had told you and mm-hmm. yeah, luckily for you, it hasn't really been too much of an issue. Cause that's you know, if you don't like that feeling, if you're not comfortable with that feeling, it's not mm-hmm. That's going to be a con. Whereas most people are like, great, an increased sex drive sounds great, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I do have a question, and I would like you to, excuse me, answer it for a person that I'm asking the question for, okay?
Okay.
Kind of like this is an educational moment that I would love to snip off your answer and give to her, okay? So this person is very confused why so many young women, instead of being butch lesbians,
are transitioning to the male gender, are going to be trans men. And she said, what happened to the butch lesbians? I don't understand it. And she thinks it's tragic. And so clearly she's not understanding something that maybe you two could help her understand, her and maybe other people as well. Like in the past, before it became a little more common to transition, women would, you know, dress butch and act like, maybe some of them would act like men, I don't know. We know one woman who would put on 5 o'clock shadow on her face so she'd have a beard. But that was in the 70s. I'm sure if she lived now, she would, I mean, if she was young now, she'd probably transition also. But so what is it that being a butch lesbian does not satisfy? And Hale, could you answer first?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because you were a lesbian.
I was.
And so you have firsthand knowledge of my question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question. I think that's a lot. I've heard that a lot. I've actually been asked that personally, pretty confrontationally, by an older woman who was, you know, in her 60s, a lesbian, very proud of that. And I think, I mean, I talked to her, and I think the thing we have to understand, it's like, I think... It's like we've come to this. I think a lot of us have started to understand sexuality, where we have straight, and then you have homosexual, right? On heterosexual, homosexual, on the two ends. But then we know now that there's plenty of people that are somewhere on that, you know, spectrum. For instance, I have a really good friend. She's been in love with a woman once, and every other person she's dated has been a man, you know. But so she's on the spectrum still, like in that middle, you know. And I think that's what gender is. And why wouldn't it be, right? Because I mean, nature, you know, it's just not many things are black and white. And I think we all fall in a different part of that spectrum. And I think as we're seeing, there's a lot of non-binary people that don't identify with male or female. Maybe they identify with both at times, maybe neither, maybe, you know. And I think we just, it's just a new concept, I think. It's hard to get your, it can be hard to get your head around it, because gender, I think, has been so kind of shoved down our throats in this culture of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. And I think a lot of this younger generation is starting to like think outside the box, in the sense of, you know, ask themselves, well, what am I, you know, or what, what do I feel inside, and what is gender, and what does that mean to me? And so, yeah, I think that's sort of, it's a spectrum. And I think a lot of people are falling on either side of that, and, or in any part in between. And so someone that, you know, identified maybe as a butch lesbian in the 70s, you know, maybe if they came up in this time, maybe they would feel a different way, just because it's, I don't know, it's okay to do that now, and we can think out a little outside the box. And maybe someone wants to be a woman with a beard, and I'm like, that's great, you know. Maybe they want to be a non-binary person that was born female and has a beard, and sometimes wears a dress, and something. I think we just have a lot more freedom now, is I think what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that, the word freedom, and I think that's where I go with it too, as well, that we have more freedom than we did back in the day. And so a lot of people had to dress masculine and be butch and be, you know, be that way, because that's what, that was the limitation that they had, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I agree.
There's more options, it more, seems. Yeah. And it's how you feel inside as well.
Yeah, it's all about the inside.
Yeah, yeah, lesbian never rang true for me. It just didn't feel right for some reason. It's just because I don't know. I just don't feel like a woman. I'm, you know, I'm not a woman. I know that. So,
yeah. So how did you handle this woman getting in your face when you said she was a little confrontational? What did she say, and how did you react?
She said that. She's like, you know, all of my friends who are about her age, you know, they, you know, we were having dinner the other night, and because I had just come over to my friend's house, who was a housemate of this person, and I had told her that I was trans. I was probably a year into transitioning. And anyway, she said, I just think, you know, this is a travesty, and like, this is so upsetting for us, because, like, you know, we're women, and women need to like stick together, queer women as well, lesbian women as well, and it seems like it's almost like a traitor, almost like, you know, I don't think she said that word, but it was like implied, you know, it's you kind of went to the other side, you know.
And what did you, how did you respond?
I was pretty shocked, I think, for a minute, but then I just tried to explain as best I could, like, kind of what I just said. It's just like, I never, I never like really identified that way, you know. I think, yeah, just as you know, it's for a long time it wasn't okay for women to wear pants, right? And like,
right.
And then they were able to finally do. It's like now, you know, we're just evolving, I think. And I was just like, it's just the new. I mean, it's like a, it's freedom. It's just another. Yeah, it's another step in the direction of, I think, queerness. You know.
Yeah, I don't understand people like that. I really don't, because it's the audacity for somebody to come at you like that, you know? It's just, you have the right to be. I mean, it just takes a lot of work to transition. Yeah. I don't think people just transition exactly. Just for the H of it. You know yeah. What I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Right? No.
Nope, you sure don't.
So it's like, hello. So, yeah, I try and get that across to a lot of people myself, too.
Yeah. And just one, yeah, it's, I think it's hard because, like, you, I think maybe heterosexual people, they think, oh, LGBTQIA, blah, blah, blah. Those people, they're all, you know, over there. And it's like, we're already so marginalized as a group, mm-hmm. You know. I don't think people realize, like, there's marginalization going on inside that group and how hurtful that is. Mm-hmm. We need to stick together, you know. Mm-hmm. There's also this whole situation in the trans community as well. It's, like, binary trans people, so trans men, trans women, like Eli and myself, trans men. You know, all the non-binary people now, they're like, well, they don't deserve, you know, we're trans. We went through the hard stuff. We have dysphoria. We deserve to be trans. You don't deserve to be trans because you don't have proof of it. And, you know, it's like, why, you know... hold on, haven't we been doing this forever with, like, you know, and this has been done to us, and why perpetuate that? I think we're so much stronger together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
thank you,
Eli. What do you have, any feelings about this? Have you been confronted?
Yeah, I think not so much on this issue, since I never really identified as lesbian, but I just wanted to add to, I think a lot of people maybe still, not this woman necessarily, that's the case with her, but that a lot of people still do confuse sexual orientation and gender identity, that just because, you know, you're born as, that you were identifying as lesbian, or if a trans man isn't necessarily only attracted to women, that there are a lot of gay trans men attracted to men, or asexual trans men like me, and pansexual, all these different categories, that it's not, you know, that not all trans women are attracted to, you know, to men and vice versa. So it's, there's just all these different ranges of options that you can have and that you can be. It's there's not just one right way to be, I guess, either trans or gay or
I think what
that.
I'm looking for that I'm not quite hearing articulated from you, maybe you could go into it a little bit more, but when you say you never felt like a lesbian, Eli, or you always, you know, your best friends were boys and you had brothers and you never really felt like a girl. I mean, what does that feel like inside for you to be raised, people see you as a girl? You said you cut your hair, so I'm assuming you had long hair for mm-hmm. a bit. How did that feel to you to be seen as a girl, to present as a girl, but then you wore more and more baggy clothes and then you never felt like a girl? So I think the feeling... not feeling like a woman or not feeling like a girl, I think, is the piece that's missing for a lot of these folks that don't understand, why can't you just be a butch lesbian?
Mm-hmm.
So can you articulate it a little bit more deeply about not, how does it not feel like a girl when you are born a girl? How do you not feel like a girl when you're in a body of a girl? Like, how do you feel like a boy? What is that... look like? I mean, because I mean, I wasn't even raised with boys,
mm-hmm.
right? So I don't even know what it feels like to have a brother. But what does it feel like to want to be a boy and you're not a boy? What does it feel like not feeling like a girl and you physically are a girl? What is that?
It's very hard to articulate. I mean, I can just really only give examples that I've just always had a very visceral reaction to. If you know, female friends meaning very well, saying, "Oh, hey, girl," or like things like that, "Hey, ladies," to a group of girls, and me being among them, and just getting this like clenching in my stomach, and thinking, "Oh no, I'm not that. Why can't you see that?" Or when I was living in Jordan, one of my Jordanian guy friends, he was driving me home one evening, and he said, at the time I was going by the name Liz, and he said, "Liz, I have to tell you something." And I thought, "Oh no, it's, you know, is he professing his love for me or what? This is awkward." And he says, "I'd feel different with you. I feel like you're, like the way you talk and act, I feel like you're a guy." And I just had this feeling of euphoria inside of, like, so excited and so happy. Like, he sees me for who I am. And then I, the next day, told one of my best friends, a female friend who was there with me, said, like, Munder said the other day that I'm he feels like I'm a guy, and isn't that awesome? And I was just like overflowing, bubbly with happiness. And she just looks at me and goes, "Wait, Liz, why does that make you happy?" You know, and she's like, she can't imagine being a girl that would make me happy to for someone to feel like I'm a dude. Wow. So it's really only examples like that I can think of to explain it. It's just a deep feeling you have inside.
And you had a friend of yours tell you, when you came out to her, why can't you just be a butch lesbian? First of all, you're never even attracted to women. So anyway, but like, and you were like, and that really threw you off, because that was right before you started hormones. And you were like, wait, why can't I just dress masculinely? Why can't I just cut my hair? And why can't, I should be happy. And I was like, well, are you happy? And you're like, no. And I was like, well, why don't we, here's a good way, I think, to deal with that situation, is I just turn it back on her. I'm like, so what if you just were like, hey, man, what's up, bro? What's up, dude? And you used he pronouns for this woman that you were talking to. I mean, she would feel very uncomfortable. Mm. How do you know? But why? Because you know what you are inside, you know? And I think you know what you are. It's just that we had to figure it out the hard way, because it wasn't, our body wasn't matching up with our minds, or, you know? And so I think it's just, how does anyone know what they are? Mm-hmm. You just know what feels right. And I think that's just the simple answer. And you know what doesn't feel right, you know? Mm-hmm. So...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea of, you know, how would that feel to your friend if he said, hey, bro, hey, man.
Or if you're like, sir, can I ask you something? I mean, she'd be like, oh, my God, like, what, you know, so confusing. And that's how we felt, I think, our whole life on some level.
Yeah.
Even though everyone is telling us around us, you are this, we somehow.
And our bodies were telling us.
Our bodies were telling us. And somehow it's so strong that we know that we weren't that. And so that's, I think, anyone, regardless of your gender identity, you know what you are, you know?
Right. So. They tried to do that for, you know, just lesbians or gay people, too, you know? Just be straight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, right?
As if it's a choice.
It's a choice, yeah, like black and white, yeah. I can't change, I can't be white, I'm black, okay? Hello? Don't want to be white, you know what I'm saying? It's like, doesn't make sense, but yeah.
And for me, at least, I'm not... No, the whole process of going out and transitioning, I'm not doing this for fun. Like, I would so much rather not do this and have been born a boy, you know? It's not like I'm getting anything out of this really hard emotional process of coming out to family who aren't, at first maybe aren't supportive, and then having to take a shot of testosterone my entire life. That doesn't, in surgeries, it's not like we wouldn't do this, I think, most people, unless you are absolutely certain that this is who you are. So it's not a simple decision.
All right. So I'm curious about your parents, though. How did that happen when you said, this is who I am now? I mean, being from a religious background. Go ahead, Eli.
So I was not worried at all about them disowning me or rejecting me. That my parents and family are very loving and have always been very, very supportive of everything. But, you know, again, this was never really a topic of conversation. And I knew that it wasn't necessarily something they would, you know, I thought, felt like it was something they might kind of frown upon or just really not know anything about or be uncomfortable with. And so they definitely, you know, my mom's first words after I told her was, okay, we love you. What does this mean? But we do love you. We love you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and since that time, she's really been trying hard to be supportive. And she said this, you know, it's hard for me to be supportive. I'm a little uncomfortable with this, but I really want to get to the point where I can be supportive. Mm. And I can tell just over the past 6 or so months that she really has been working hard and trying to educate herself and talk to other people. And it can still be hard. And definitely for a while near the beginning was very uncomfortable. And when I told her I wanted to have top surgery, she said, oh, I don't think I can be the caretaker for you. And I don't think I can support this, but she's since come around. And so it was definitely very hard at first. I kind of felt, you know, I was definitely still welcome in my home, but I didn't feel as comfortable just being around them and being at my old, you know, childhood home as I had. I'm very lucky to have had very, very supportive brothers and sister-in-law, which was great and helped a lot. But it was definitely hard with the parents. Of course, not as bad as a lot of people who, you know, who aren't welcome in their homes after that. But it was difficult, but it's getting better for sure.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to grow a beard? A mustache.
If that's in my genetics and it appears, I would love it. But it's really dependent on genetics. You know, some trans guys get really thick full beards, mm-hmm. and others never do. It's like cis men. You know, some aren't able to have facial hair. So we'll see.
Oh, just checking.
Yeah.
Because I know I see a little buzz on that face over there. Hey, yo.
That's the best I can do, unfortunately.
It looks nice. It looks really nice.
So your parents, your family? Mm.
Yeah. So I had a couple of coming out experiences just because I identified as lesbian. And so I came out to them when I was 18 first as, you know, a lesbian. And that was actually harder than coming out as trans. They didn't take it super well. Again, I come from like a religious, pretty conservative area. And they had a lot of questions that were just really like sort of just uninformed, you know, but came from a place of worry, you know, like, I don't want you to get AIDS, like, you know, whatever. And it's, even though lesbians are like the least demographic to get AIDS, I believe. So it's like, you know, they were piecing together all the fragments of information they knew about queer people or gay people, I think. And, didn't take that so well. We got over it. We worked through it. And then about what, 5 or 6 years later, I came out as trans, and it was a little easier. I just presented them with that letter that I was talking about earlier. And you know, my mom cried, but she cries. And my dad just said, you know, we're sorry you had to deal with this for so long. You felt like you couldn't say anything. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Wow. So, and we've come around since then. It took a minute, you know, it took a couple months, and we had some hard conversations about awkward body part things and just weird, you know, weird stuff. But you know, I was pretty open. I remained pretty open with them. And I think that was a key for me. So yeah, we're great now. They're super supportive. Yeah.
Wonderful. Lucky. I'm so sorry we have to end our show. Gosh, we would love to talk to you longer. But we do have time for you to take about 30 seconds each on words of wisdom to people who are listening. You have an opportunity to give somebody advice, maybe. What would you want to say, Eli?
So this is a piece of advice my aunt gave me years ago, actually, long before I realized I was trans. It was when I was going through a health issue, seeing a lot of doctors, trying to find there's something that was wrong that, you know, the doctors weren't finding. And she just told me, you know, don't let anyone else tell you what's going on with your body. If people are saying there's nothing wrong, and if you feel like there's something wrong or something up, don't give up until you get to the bottom of it. And don't let other people tell you how you feel. You are the only one who knows how you feel. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, applies really well, both if you're going through health conditions or, you know, with gender issues and all sorts of things. And that has helped me a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mine has to do with, like, grace as a concept. And I think it pertains to, like, all people, regardless of your gender identity, sexual identity. But just trusting, like, it's kind of what Eli said, but trusting your instincts and just giving things time, just letting yourself be, and accepting yourself no matter what comes up, and just going. I think we're all so hard on ourselves. I think just going easy on yourself and really just letting yourself be who you are. I think it pays its dividends later, you know.
So, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you both so much for being here. I wish we had more time, because I know there's lots more story there.
Mm-hmm. Remember, like Hale and Eli, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.